So little Johnny one day came home from the playground with a bloody nose and a black eye, and his clothing was torn. And his father was patching him up, and he asked his son, "What happened?" "Well, Dad," said Johnny, "I challenged Larry to a duel. And you know, I gave him a choice of his weapon." Said his father. "That seems fair." "I know," said Johnny, "but I never thought he'd choose his big sister." He got clobbered. Today, Jesus is in teaching mode, and he's teaching, and he's sharing blessings with those who've been clobbered by life. And then, after he shares those blessings, he gets into sharing some woes to those who've already seen the other side of the equation. Jesus offers blessings to those who've been hit hard by life and the ways of the world, and woes to those who've eaten their fill and then some. Now, I don't want you to get this confused. This is not salvation, damnation kind of talk. Okay? This is Jesus in teaching mode. And I think when he says, "Blessed are you," what he means there is, satisfied are you. Unburdened are you. At peace are you. And likewise, he pronounces woes to the listener. And I think those woes mean, watch out. Hey, you. Be careful. In other words, watch your step. Don't get too comfortable putting your trust in things that you don't need to put your trust in. Put your trust in the Lord, not in what the world thinks you should. So you and I fall today. Are we people who need to hear the words, "Blessed are you," or do we need to hear a little bit of a reality, a little wake up with, "Woe to you"? My guess is, if we're going to keep it between the lines, we kind of need to hear both, right? The blessings and the woes. Certainly, you and I, we drove here to church this morning. How many drove here to church this morning? Congratulations, you're among the 2% of the wealthiest people in the world. We certainly are people who've experienced the blessed side of things, aren't we? And oftentimes we don't even think of ourselves as wealthy because there's still something else we want to wear. Still something else we want to drive. Still something else we want. And this world is really good at telling us we are just one purchase away from fulfillment. I doubt that any member of this congregation has experienced hunger this past week. Please prove me wrong if you have. I'm talking not about the kind of hunger like I have announced, like when I come home at 6 o'clock and I haven't eaten a thing since lunch. Right? Oh, I'm starved! No, I'm talking about no food in the pantry. I'm talking about no food in the fridge and no way to access it either. So yes, we may be those very people who need to hear some of Jesus' woes today. Watch out, don't gloat over that 401k that you're amassing. Don't put your trust in a security blanket when there are con artists continually trying to contrive new ways to make it evaporate from your account. Watch out when everybody at school or work is speaking glowingly about you. Because any teenager can tell you that your best friend can turn on you like a vicious dog. We may need to hear woes today. We also may need to be consoled with words of blessing. There are people here this morning who are grieving the death of a spouse or a family member, a longtime friend. And though an employer may give you 3 days of bereavement leave, it may take years in reality to grieve the loss of someone you love. Blessed are you, Jesus said, who weep now, for you will laugh. And another blessing. Blessed are you when people exclude, revile, and defame you on account of the Son of Man. Rejoice and leap for joy. That is exactly what they did to the prophets. Some of you may feel excluded, maybe even from your own families, and your Christian faith, your understanding of that faith, and the kind of Lord you put your trust in may be a partial cause for the wedge. Jesus says, do a happy dance when you're rejected for doing what God smiles upon, but the world frowns upon. You know those football players, right? When they get into the end zone and they've scored that touchdown, they have their own happy dance, right? They have all kinds of things that they do in that end zone. Celebrate. Jesus wants you to celebrate when you have done what He smiles on, even though the people of this world may curse you for it. Is there some way in which you may have your body in alignment with your soul and with God that you might, when you're rejected for doing something God approves of, maybe you just go, yes. Make up your own little happy dance. And that the next time you feel rejected for doing a good thing, that you can remind yourself that God is with you. John S. McClure said that when he was in college, his friend did the right thing and was cursed for it. He said that in college, his friend wrote an article for the school newspaper challenging racism in the fraternity system on that college campus. Several days later, after writing that article, he was badly beaten, covered with molasses and chicken feathers, and left tied with his hands behind his back and his feet tied in the parking lot of the student center. Those who benefit from a system of privilege go to great lengths to assure that they remain in power. I wonder if John or if any of his Christian friends went to that friend's aid and shared with him that he was in good company with the prophets. One thing that's helpful here, I think, as we look at this sermon on the plain that Jesus gives in Luke's gospel, is to look backward from it and to look forward from it, because they form the context in which these words are spoken. Looking backward, we can look back to Mary, Jesus' mother, before he was even born, and hear the words of God turning the world on its ear in Jesus, talking about the reversal of roles and status in the world, the poor taking their turn, the rich going away empty. And in looking backward, we also see Jesus in his sermon at Nazareth. Remember that a couple of weeks ago we had that story here in worship. Jesus in Nazareth saying, the eyes of the blind are open. Those who can't breathe can breathe again. That is the world, the reality in Jesus from now on. We must remember to look back at these things, for they form the basis of what Jesus is teaching us today. And then we are to look forward also to the Christian community. You know, Luke is a two-part reading, and it's Luke, and then it's Acts, and they're all by the same author. And Acts is the story of the life of the early church. And it's in the early church where the Christians live out the kind of life that Jesus is foreshadowing in his teaching. In Acts chapter 2, you might go and check it out particularly. The Christian community was different from the ways of the world. In Acts 2, the Christians come together and they hold everything in common. It's not your wheelbarrow. It's our wheelbarrow. Right? They hold everything in common. What's mine is not mine. It's yours too. It was marked by radical sharing, this Christian community. The rich didn't have too much, and the poor Christians didn't have too little. Everybody had enough. That's what God's economy looks like. They took turns and they shared. They broke bread, it says, with glad and generous hearts. Not one person getting two-thirds of the loaf and the other 20 getting to share the last third. That's the economy of our world right now. That's not the economy of God's kingdom. We all share and share alike. How are we at St. Thomas called to live deeper into that reality where the financially shackled among us are unburdened and at peace? I think we saw a glimpse of that community last night when we gathered for a meal and the proceeds of our dining went to buy bicycles for pastors in Cuba. Right? How many of us don't have bicycles to spare in our garage? But this, so that they could tend to their flocks and could make sure that they had the basics of life. How might we, like the early church, who saw themselves as Jesus' embodiment of the Sermon on the Plain, who saw each person, regardless of their background or skin color or age or gender or income level, any of that, and more, each person equal in God's eyes. People are hungry for that. People are reaching out for that because there's power in that kind of radical community. Imagine us, a community who says to people, you shall not be left behind, not by these Christ followers. Sometimes we wonder, is there help for me? Does God really want to help me? There's a pastor who had a 5-year-old daughter. She noticed that he would bow his head and pray before every sermon. She asked about that, and he said to her, well, honey, I'm asking the Lord to help me preach a good sermon. And she said, well, Daddy, why doesn't he help you? The Sermon on the Plain reminds us that Jesus is here to help us. First words that depict the scene in Jesus' Sermon on the Plain are powerful to me in that reading we had today. They give this image of a crowd. There's no hill. There are no some above others. They're on a plain, and everyone's at the same level. Isn't that the way it is at the cross? Everyone on the same level. No one above or below. All hungry to hear God's word. All touching for the power of God to be unleashed in their lives. Where do you touch Jesus today? Where do you lay hold of him and get a deep sense of peace and blessing? I hope that's at Holy Communion. Because his power, he promises, will go out from him to you there. For you to touch him and behold him and be blessed and be at peace. A blessing for you and for all awaits.